Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Santa Clarita, a city I lived in for 3 years back in 2011 through 2014, is a city with many great tales. On season 8, episode 2, I had the pleasure of interviewing Evan Decker, the president of Mintryville, California, Inc., a nonprofit that is fundraising to restore the Mintryville buildings to the time period of their heyday and open them to the public for tours. And along with this responsibility, Evan also works in other locations around Santa Clarita and has had many experiences at different places such as Heritage Junction, the William S. Hart Mansion, you name it. So, naturally, Evan has had stories at these other locations which I saved for this episode. The first place we will touch base on is the William S. Hart Mansion. I did an Instagram reel on this place a while back, so it is only fitting for me to reintroduce the story and the history of this particular place. Silent film superstar William S. Hart had built a Spanish-style mansion called La Loma de los Vientos on his 254-acre horseshoe ranch in Newhall in 1927. The 22-room house was commissioned to the Los Angeles architect, Arthur Kelly, to build a Spanish-style mansion on the ranch. The name, La Loma de los Vientos, means Hill of the Winds. The mansion was designed to accommodate Hart's wheelchair-bound sister, Mary Ellen, who had exterior access from her second-story bedroom. But sadly, she would pass away in 1943, and William would pass away himself in 1946, only 3 years later. Now, in his will, Hart left his Newhall estate to the people of the Los Angeles County, despite a contested claim by his estranged son, William Jr. The Los Angeles County Department of Parks and Recreation currently maintains the estate's grounds, and the mansion is part of the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County. Now, while the historic mansion is housed with Western art, Native American artifacts, and early Hollywood memorabilia, there have been reports of something even more intriguing. The tour of the William S. Hart Ranch and Museum has left visitors with the strong impression of something or someone still lingering within these beautiful walls. Speculations arise about the presence of William S. Hart himself, continuing to love his home even in death, or the possible presence of his sister in her room. Docents, or another word for tour guides, at the museum often report seeing Hart's ghost, while the ghosts of Hart's two Great Danes have also been observed. In the mansion's kitchen, which is never used, the smell of freshly brewed coffee often lingers, perplexing the docents, which, funny enough, Evan will comment on later in this episode. Now, despite a sophisticated alarm system, motion sensors have been triggered at night when the estate is locked up, but no one is ever found in the mansion. And it is said that the docents maintain a logbook documenting the various unusual experiences and paranormal phenomena on the property. The crazy thing is, it is said that Hart only appears to people he likes. Now, before I dive into Evan's stories, I would love to share some other stories I found on hauntedplaces.org, which I found very intriguing. The first story was an anonymous tale posted in August 2014. When my daughter, who is currently 9 years old, was younger, she had two distinct experiences at the Hart Mansion. The first occurred when she was around 3.5 years old, while we were at the lower bunkhouse. After she peered through a window, she proceeded to tell a detailed account of a sorrowful man named Black F, who had lost his mother and sister. She even described his attire in detail. The second incident took place during a preschool field trip inside the mansion. Alongside a friend, she knocked on a door and was greeted by a man who seemed to be aggravated that she was knocking. Behind him, she glimpsed three men dressed as cowboys, all focused on a game of cards. She also mentioned the presence of a dog and a cat in the room. Curious about their activities, my daughter inquired, only to be met with an odd glance from the man before he shut the door. Without a doubt, I am convinced that the place is inhabited by spirits. The second story was posted by Liz on March 7th, 2021. During my aunt's visit from Cape Cod, we indulged in a delightful hike and strolled around the picturesque grounds before deciding to take the guided tour of the William S. Hart Mansion. The moment we stepped inside, an eerie sensation swept over me, as if someone was observing us from the distant staircase above. Attempting to dismiss the feeling, I continued exploring the house, but the persistent notion of being trailed persisted. And as we approached the bedroom section, a peculiar sight unfolded before my eyes. A chambermaid appeared to dash down the hallway, passing right through me. The encounter left me utterly astonished, prompting my aunt to question my sudden distress. Feeling drained of energy, I requested a moment outside and settled on a nearby bench, and I recounted the incident to my aunt. And just as the tour guide was departing, they noticed my state and inquired about my well-being. Seizing the opportunity, I inquired about the spiritual history of the place. Confused, they asked for clarification, to which I replied, "I believe I've encountered something paranormal." And at that moment, they acknowledged the presence of such phenomena within the premises. And the last story was posted by Charlotte on May 31st, 2021. Recently, I had a remarkable encounter when I ascended the hill and immediately sensed a distinct shift in the atmosphere. Being deeply spiritual and open to all faiths, I possess a heightened ability to perceive malevolence and could unmistakably sense its presence. However, amidst this eerie aura, I experienced something extraordinary, and I believed I encountered Hart. While washing my hands in the restroom, I inadvertently broke the faucet, causing it to detach. And as I attempted to fix it, the water continued to flow without ceasing. Astonishingly, the faucet lid began to screw itself back on, effortlessly halting the water's flow. Overwhelmed with gratitude, I couldn't help but exclaim, "Thank you!" aloud, expressing my appreciation twice. Now, that last one might not be so scary, but it's an interesting tale. But I'm going to leave it up to you if you believe that's true or not. Now, doing research on this place, I kind of went into a sort of a rabbit hole, if you'd say. Found another tale posted on a website, sebar.com, where the author claimed to have taken interesting photos of the site, which I will link in the description of this episode. Now, during a visit to the William S. Hart Estate, the author shared multiple photographs, one in which they captured images of purple plasma energy, PPEN, on the veranda. A weird shadow in the window resembling a skull face with a cigar, and more instances of this purple plasma energy on the second story and upper tower windows, and the most haunting one I saw of all of them was a pic of the dining area revealing a mysterious figure who was not present during the author's visit. However, it could be possible that the guy didn't realize that a person may have walked through the doorway after he took the picture. And then there is a translucent shadow in the upstairs living room, highlighted as a negative, appearing to show a woman's back and a Victorian-style dress collar. And lastly, a portrait of William S. Hart showing a purple hue in the negative snapshot. So, what the hell is this PPEN thing? This purple plasma energy. If any of you know what that is, because I could not find much about it on Google or any other place, I would love to hear more about it. And if you want to reach out to me on Instagram at @thescarecast or email me at mike@thescarecast.com, I would love to hear your explanation on this whole purple plasma energy thing. And definitely check out these photographs I mentioned, because they are quite remarkable. Now, as far as the tales I've told before, as to whether they're true or not is really up to you. Do you believe in these stories, or are these just stories simply made up by someone behind a computer screen? Now, going back to my interview with Evan Decker, a historian, it was only natural that Evan would delve into the history of William S. Hart and his sister Mary Ellen, who have both been known to haunt the home.
So basically, the story, the experience I had here is, okay, basically, Hart, he did not pass away in the house, although I've been told time and time again that he did have a stroke in the back staircase of the mansion because he died June 23rd, 1946. And so I think he had the stroke in May. I have a copy of his death certificate in my files, and it actually says on there how long he was in the hospital for until he passed. So I'll have to go and look and get back to you how. So he had a stroke here, and then he was taken down because, you know, there wasn't really an adequate hospital here at the time. There was one in Newhall, but it was very small. And so for a big-time movie star, they took him down to L.A., California Lutheran Hospital, which is now the UCLA Medical Center, where he passed away. And so, basically, people have said over the years that his presence is very much here, and that also that of his sister, Mary Ellen. So his sister, Mary Ellen Hart, who lived here as well, she was very much part of his, you know, helping him, you know, she was kind of like the behind the scenes woman of, you know, the man. And so she was very much helped him with his financial affairs. They had a very close relationship. And actually, she was in a car accident in 1917 where she had to be, which she was called a semi-invalid. So she wasn't fully confined to a wheelchair, but there were periods in her life later on where she, you know, suffered. And so actually there was a live-in nurse that would stay here in periods of time and, you know, live here on site and, you know, care for their needs. And when, you know, because you have to understand, when Hart was living here, he was retired. This was his retirement mansion. So he spent the last 20 years of his life here. and as well as his sister Mary Ellen. So her presence is felt here a lot. Actually, some former security guards have even told me, like, one of our security guards from a couple years ago said he walked into Mary Ellen's room. So there's certain rooms. So when the museum reopens, because it's closed right now, there's a, you know, a tour route, and it is a large house. Like, you kind of, I mean, you can't really see from here. We're on the backside because it's kind of built how it was built. It's a, what they call a bi-level house. So the front part looks like a two-story, and then it's kind of contoured with the mountainside. So it's kind of just perched on the hill, more or less. Mm-hmm. So anywho, but it's 10,000 square feet, 22 rooms. It's a large house. And so the experience I had was, it was after tours, and we always have a security guard that follows our tours, you know, to make sure, because there's, yeah, it's left as is. So there is a fence that blocks, you know, where the pub, but, you know, the paintings and everything, it's just hanging there. There's no glass cases from, you know, so anywho, the security guard had left for the day, and my boss had to go down the hill to another building on the property to get something out for an event the next day. And he left me up in the... So here's the front of it. This is the front.
Okay.
So you can see... You can see the big tower right there. That's the observation tower. And so anywho, but... I was up here alone for about 10 minutes while he went down the hill. Because the driveway is... It's a quarter mile long. It's a long driveway. It kind of... winds its, because we're on top of a mountain.
Wow.
And so I was in the house alone, and I was making sure all the doors were locked and everything, and I'm hearing these boots, you know, the boots with the little spurs, and you can hear the clinking. I'm the only one in the house, only one in this large 10,000 square foot mansion. And I'm hearing these boots coming down the hallway with, you know, the sound of the... And it's ironic because we actually still have his boots, his actual boots that he used every day at the foot of his bed still on display. So it's like he basically left it. That's how well preserved this house is. And so, you know, I'm alone in this house, in this mansion, hearing it. And I actually, because obviously he's the only one that lived here. No other families had lived here after him because he willed it to be a public park. And, I literally turn around and I said, "I'm sorry, Bill. I'm just making sure your house is locked up." Silence after that. It was complete silence. Wow. So I was always convinced since that he was, you know, just making sure I wasn't, you know, some intruder.
Remember when I said Hart only showed up to people whom he liked? I guess we can assume that Evan may have been on Hart's good side to have shown himself. So before we move on, please don't touch that dial. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And before these advertisements play, I want to remind you all to please follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Scarecast. And if you got any scary stories, send me an email at mike@thescarecast.com or send me a DM. And if you enjoyed this episode so far, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your respective podcast player.
And then another time, we had an instance where, so Mary Ellen, so Hart loved animals. He actually was honorary president of the SPCA, you know, the Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, for the Los Angeles chapter. And big animal lover. I mean, we have all of his 11 dogs are buried here on the property in a little graveyard at the bottom of the hill. And so, and actually in the house, they had their own bedroom. The dogs had their own bedroom. So they were spoiled. And so Mary Ellen had a cat, his sister had a cat, a little cute little kitty named Westport Puffins. I know, what a name, right? And so one time my boss and I were sitting in the office here, which is behind this window right here. So this okay. section here is our museum offices, but at that time in Hart's day, this was the they had the help. And so they had their own bedroom and bathrooms, and so it was kind of like a service kind of quarters area. And so it's just a long hallway off the kitchens with two bedrooms with a conjoining bathroom. So it's our museum offices. And so my boss and I are sitting in her office, and we're just talking, having a normal conversation like you and I. And all of a sudden you hear meow down, you know, coming down from the kitchens down the hallway. And it was loud enough, and this was after tours, by the way, so it was after the museum was closed and all that. And so it was enough to where we looked at each other to investigate. That's how loud it was. And all the windows and doors are sealed, so you can't open them, you know, either way. So they're all sealed, you know, for security purposes. And okay. So, it was enough to, it was enough to have us go investigate. So this place is one of the more interesting places. And then there's also been stories where people have felt his dogs, the presence of his dogs here too.
Yeah.
So the Great Dane, so he had the last two dogs he owned were two Harlequin Great Danes. So they look like, I think you can find photos of them on YouTube. They're basically pictures if you ever find any pictures of Hart on Google Images with two, they look like Dalmatians, but they're Great Danes that have the coating of a Dalmatian. They were black, white with black spots, I think. And okay. Prince and Gal were their names, and they were huge. And so people have reported over the years of their presence wandering, kind of just because he gave them free roam of the place. I mean, he spoiled the hell out of his animals. And so, yeah. If you spoil, who doesn't, who, you can't spoil, you have to spoil your animals to give your dogs their own bedroom. And so, he would let his dogs have free roam of the place. And so, that was another big thing where people have felt the presence of his dogs.
I mean, damn, 22 rooms? What the hell does he need so many rooms for? Them dogs probably had their own room, bathroom, and a walk-in closet. Those dogs definitely won the lottery for a happy, stress-free life of a dog.
And then, I don't know if you've read in your research that the smell of coffee persists in the house.
Yeah, I heard that.
Now, that actually can be debunked. So, in the 70s, so Hart's kitchen, nowadays when you tour it, you can see it's on display. It has all his original appliances. We have his original electric popcorn popper, so on and so forth. In the 70s, in the early days of the museum, that was the docent kitchen. And so that part of, nowadays you can walk through there, it's tourable, but back then that section of the house wasn't open to the public. And so, you know, the docents would hang out there and, you know, brew coffee in the old coffee machine and whatever. And so people would, you know, be walking through the house and, you know, obviously get the smell of aroma of coffee. And so, you know, it's like that thing of telephone where people, you know, smell coffee and think, oh no, ghost. Bill's here brewing his, you know, nice cup of Folgers coffee. So, but yeah, that was kind of like the break room in the 1970s.
Oh, more
or less his old kitchen. Now it's, now it's, you know, set up back to the way it was, you know.
So you heard it here. The coffee smell that is often said to be that of a paranormal origin. It's nothing more than the docents brewing a cup of coffee while on break, and this was back in the 70s. Which of course could have been mistaken because it no longer serves as the docent kitchen. and with people spreading old stories of this coffee smell, a mix-up most likely occurred during the telling of this legend.
What did you say about the security guards? Did they say stuff?
Oh, yeah. So one of our security guards years back said he did see, as he told me, he was coming down the hall, because to get to Mary Ellen's room, it's kind of this long corridor, and then we have her wheelchair that she used. It's kind of, you know, like an old school kitchen chair on wheels. And, you know, out there in front, you know, because you can't, her room is one of the rooms that is not open to the public, because it's kind of at the end of a hallway, and it's kind of hard, logistically hard, to have a tour group turn around and, you know, double back. And so he was going down the hall, and as he was entering her room, he's told me sitting on her bed, he said it was like a translucent image of her. Because we have pictures and paintings of her throughout the house. And so he knew right away it was her. So, yeah, he said he was just, she was sitting there on the bed, just standing there, and then after a few seconds, she just kind of fizzled away. And then another security officer later on, we were closing up the house, he was closing up the house, and he told me this later. He said he saw, so in Bill's room, so Mary Ellen's room is here, Bill's room is on that side of, this part over here. And, he has a rock, you know, his bed, all the furniture in his room is the exact same stuff. It's left the way he left it. And so there's a rocking chair next to his bed where his boots and everything is. And so our security guard was closing up, and he said he walked in there, and there was that translucent image of a tall 6 foot, he described to me as 6 foot tall man with a cowboy hat, kind of just cross-legged, sitting in the rocking chair, just sitting there relaxing. And Hart was 6'2". So,
did he see like the rocking chair actually?
No, he said he told me that it was, he was just sitting there. So,
are these like security guards generally pretty spooked out after these experiences? Like when they tell you about it?
No. At least not when they explain it to me. Not enough to where they, you know, run out of here. There have been times where former staff have, that has happened, where, not here in the museum, but down the hill at Heritage Junction, which is within the park boundaries. There, people have been spooked enough to where they'll be like, I'm not coming back.
Now, before I dip into my talks with Evan regarding another haunted location, Heritage Junction, I should give my little spiel on this. The Heritage Junction, most recently renamed as the Santa Clarita Historic Center, houses a cluster of historical buildings that date from 1878 to 1927, and it now serves as a museum open to the public. Now, over the years, there have been many reports of ghostly sightings, bringing about the attention of multiple paranormal investigators. Armed with floor plans and dowsing rods, a pair of psychics claim to have communicated with spirits residing in several buildings. Psychic Ginny McGovern saw the spirits of two children in an adult's bedroom in the Kingsbury House. She identified the girl as showing off her dress and the boy as Daniel Drake. Now in the Edison House, psychics sensed a strong negative presence. They felt that a murder might have occurred at this very house, with one psychic mentioning the name Charles Valencia. The American Paranormal Research Association, APRA, had also conducted investigations at Heritage Junction, revealing two chilling audio clips, which I will link in the description of this episode. In one of the audio clips, there is a woman's voice in the Saugus train station, and a young boy's voice in the attic of the Newhall Ranch House. The woman's EVP recording had said, "Will that be on the train?" in the station master's living quarters. The second EVP captured the voice of a young boy saying, "I want my mommy." Now, of course, with Evan Decker being involved in the preservation of these historical buildings, he had his very own stories regarding the activity being reported there.
Can you tell me more about those experiences?
The ones at Heritage, okay. The ones at Heritage.
Like the ones where they spooked him enough.
Well, I'll tell you one time in the Newhall Ranch House, we had a...
Okay.
We had, my buddy and I, we were here a couple days ago over by, not the Newhall Ranch House, that's the most haunted one, but the other most haunted one is the Kingsbury House, the Blue House. And so, but the Kingsbury House, I mean, shoot, so it was Sunday. My buddy and I were over there. The report is sometimes the curtains will open and close by themselves. And I've seen it before. And sure enough, and it happens, it's happened in the middle of the day. And sure enough, of course, and, later evening, as the sun was going down, but it wasn't quite, dark. We see the curtains start to open, and both my buddy and I look, and we could swear we saw basically from here, the upper chest up, a little girl, probably about 8 to 9 years oldish, somewhere in there, and you could make out her hairline, because she had the hair kind of going that way a little bit, and then I could at least kind of make out the top of her nightgown, because it cut out here, it kind of ended here. But yeah, that was, she was kind of appearing and reappearing, she would appear and then dissipate, we were just watching her for 10 minutes straight doing this. 10 full minutes, we just kept looking, and then...
What time of the day was this?
It was probably around 6 in the evening. The sun was still out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's things there that have happened in the daytime.
You was able to make out the figure of the little girl. Did you see a face at all, or...
Oh, fuck yes. All I could see was you could see the bridge of her nose, the makeout of her nose. You could see her face and everything, but no eyes, at least from what I could see. It didn't look like any eye. There were any eyes. She was just looking at us. Total, just staring. It wasn't like I didn't feel threatened or anything. She was just curious. At least the vibe I got.
How'd your friend react? Did your friend ever see anything like that before?
He's never seen anything spiritual or paranormal related up until that point. And so I would tell him, I've told him a bunch about the place before, like I'm telling you. And so, yeah, I told him, I said, so when you come to the park, expect the unexpected. Oh. That's how I tell all of the new, when we have new volunteers or whatever, come there. I tell people, expect the unexpected. We have everything from bison to ghosts.
So when you was looking at, is that the first time you've seen an actual figure, in the window? Before you say it was just curtains open and closing?
So in all my time at Heritage Junction, that was actually the first time I've ever seen an apparition where I can make out facial features. I don't know why, but there was always in the past, I could always feel them there and see a shadow figure, a mist, enough to where it could make out male or female, but that was it. This was the most I've ever seen clear, yeah. And it honestly might attribute to, and there's this theory that, old buildings that had, that have these spirits, you have to understand, when these buildings, these buildings were open a lot to the public. People could tour these buildings, and they've been closed since COVID. So I feel like they've been kind of just trapped in there. And so that is kind of building up their energy to, materialize more. And so, and obviously, I don't know, it's just a theory, but with me, I've been there so much, they know me. And so it's almost like, hey, how are you? I missed you, kind of thing. I don't know. That's just my...
You think she popped out because you brought someone new around?
Yeah, she was... I think so, maybe.
Out of all the places that Evan has mentioned, he claims that the Newhall Ranch House was by far his scariest experience. The Newhall Ranch House, originally located in Valencia, was built in the 1860s by Thomas R. Bard on the Rancho San Francisco. It became the residence of Henry Gregory Newhall in 1893, and later served as the ranch foreman's residence. After being damaged in an earthquake, it was sold to Six Flags Corp. in 1979, and eventually rescued by the Santa Clarita Valley History Society, relocating it to the Heritage Junction Historic Park in 1990. The Newhall Ranch House has since been reported to be haunted by a mysterious blue lady named Martha, who is frequently seen on the second floor of the home, and an 8-year-old kid named Timothy. During a Ghost Hunters investigation that aired on the Discovery Channel, the crew, along with a pair of psychics, were terrified by a powerful male spirit whom they did a sketch of, which I'll link in the description of this episode. And although it is unknown who this man was, it wouldn't be far-fetched to think that it may have been Stanley Routledge, the husband of Margaret Routledge, who, according to historians, died in the house in 1916 from a gunshot wound to her left breast. It is uncertain if she was killed or committed suicide. Margaret, a very religious woman who had never toted a weapon in her life, was last seen alive by Stanley as they ate breakfast in bed, right before her dead body was found by a servant who worked in the home. Do you think this is a case of foul play?
So, yeah, no, it's really much, very much a historical pioneer town, more or less. But the ghost stories there, I mean, each building kind of has its own reports to it, its own kind of accounts. But honestly, wow. the most haunted one, and it's my favorite house on the whole property, but it is the most haunted one. Every time I walk by,
okay. It
gives me chills. The Newhall Ranch House. That building, just talking about it, you walk in there and you know right away. I mean, literally, what I would do, because I spent so much time there. I mean, at one point, I had the keys to all the buildings because I was on the board. And so, there was one time we would have, people come in and they would say, oh yeah, I have a sixth sense, so I'm a clairvoyant, and I would test them. I already knew the narrative, the history and everything about that house. And so I'd say, all right, and open the door. And each and every one of them, it didn't matter who it was, or they didn't know each other. They were all telling me the same thing. You can hear the clock.
Wow.
So a lot of the reports in that house, there's three major spirits, I guess you could say, presences. One is the lady in blue, which you probably heard about that one. That's the famous one.
Yeah, I did hear about that one.
So her name is, we think her name is Martha. And so the ranch house used to be, so that house, remember, all the buildings were built somewhere else and then moved there. So the ranch house used to be where, if you're familiar with Magic Mountain, where the employee parking lot is now, which is kind of on the, I guess you could say, the western side of the park, of the parking lot. Before Magic Mountain, that was the Newhall Ranch. That was where there was a bunch of feedlots there, cattle lots. And that's where all the livestock and all that was, because before Newhall Land and Farming Company, if you've done research on them, they were a very old company that was actually started by Henry Mayer Newhall. It was a land company. And eventually our generation came to know them as home builders, tract home builders. But they were originally an agricultural and livestock land. And so the Newhall Ranch House was the ranch foreman's house. And so, because, you know, every ranch had to have a foreman to run the place and to make sure all the cows got fed and all that. And so the house, we think it was also part of the Castaic Range Wars too, because there's also a spirit of a cowboy that likes to hang out in the stairwell named Rory McGregor.
Oh, wow. So it's, we got Martha, we got the cowboy, and it's a third one. There,
so the third one is the eight-year-old boy named Timmy.
Eight-year-old kid.
And his name is Timmy. And actually, it's funny because I have an actual memory of an experience back with him. Yeah, no. So Timmy and Martha, we don't really have a history behind them. The only thing we know about Rory is, well, two things. He might have been part of one of the cowboys killed in the Range War, or something to do with that, or a cowboy probably killed on the property. Because it was the Wild West at the end of the day when the house was built. So the back part of the house is older than the front part.
So Rory McGregor, the cowboy mentioned by Evan, was a spirit I did not get much research on when I initially discovered this haunting. It is conceivable that Rory, a rancher residing at the Newhall Ranch, met his demise during the violent conflicts known as the Castaic Range Wars. According to certain accounts, McGregor's spectral presence is said to linger at the Newhall Ranch House, manifesting a courteous individual in his middle years, attired in a cowboy hat and boots. And what was this thing about the Castaic Range War? The Castaic Range War occurred between ranchers William Willoughby Jenkins and William C. Cormacle in Castaic, California, from 1890 to 1916. The conflict began when Cormacle purchased 1,600 acres of land that Jenkins had previously settled on. Legal proceedings failed to resolve the dispute, leading to violent confrontations between the two parties. Gun battles, burning of barns, and killings took place during the conflict, with casualties on both sides. Jenkins survived several assassination attempts, including being shot 7 times, while Cormacle died of chronic kidney disease in 1919. The disputed land, now submerged under the Castaic Lake, serves as a reminder of the Castaic Range War, which remains a significant event in the region's history. Now, before we go on with this story, please don't touch that dial as we will have to take another commercial break. And make sure you watch your back as we leave the Wild, Wild West.
So the back part, the part that we all see in pictures with the wraparound porch, that section of the house, the two-story section, was built, we think, around 1893. And then the back one-story section facing the road is actually from about 1860. So they just kind of attached the buildings, you know, together, more or less, when they built the the newer structure. And so
it's like a little add-on.
Oh, yes. And actually, the Pardee house, so the first house next to that, the other greenhouse, is the same way. It was actually two houses joined together. So to make it look at what it looks like today, but about 7 years ago, we were digging through the archives, the LA Times archives, and we actually found out that a murder took place there in about January of 1916. And so you've probably researched about the gunshot death of Margaret Rutledge. When I first started volunteering there, I never heard about the murder or anything. One of our other volunteers had been digging through the archives and found this article along with her death certificate. So we have a copy of her death certificate. And so she was 31 years old when she passed. So Margaret was the wife of the ranch foreman for Newhall Ranch at the time. His name was Stanley Rutledge. I think the husband did it. I honestly think the husband did it, in my opinion. The case has never been solved. They could never determine what, how she died, if it was suicide, murder. Basically, what happened was the maid found her with a shotgun next to her bed, and she had a bullet wound to the heart, the chest.
Oh, shit.
So, but with a shotgun, you know, it's... maybe it's not shotgun. Let me correct myself. It was a rifle. It was a rifle.
Evan would then go on to further describe an experience he personally had at the house involving a teenage couple in which the boyfriend seems to mock the spirits inside the home.
So, one time when I was working in the New Hall Ranch house down the hill at the Historical Society, they were, teenage couple, were walking around, and they, you know, were interested in the history of the house, and I explained it to them, and then the boyfriend goes, and they're probably like 18, 19, somewhere in there, and the boyfriend goes, "Oh, we've heard the house is haunted," and I said, "Well, yeah, it's, you know, there's a murder that took place in this house, and people over the years have felt things in this house." And so then the boyfriend got all macho and was, you know, trying to, you know, stir things up and be like, "All right, come on," you know, basically doing the whole boyfriend thing, you know.
Yeah.
Within 15 seconds of that, of him starting up on the second floor, which is the attic, it sounded like somebody like threw a full-on bookshelf across the... It sounded like that. That's how loud this crash was. The chandelier above us was swaying. That's how loud this crash was from the vibrations of that. And I remember kind of like looking up at the ceiling, at the chandelier, just, and I was only briefly, like with a couple seconds, and I turn around and they were already clear down the road, out the door, clear down the road, and almost to the gate.
They left.
That's
that
how
quick.
Fast they ran out of there, dude. For as long as I live, I will never forget that experience. I mean, there's definitely memorable ones, but that one, and it was kind of like, you know, because I would...
How long was the furniture moving for? How long was the...
Oh, it was literally like, it just sounded like boom! Like an explosion.
And they booked it.
And that was it. It was like, literally, it was like that. And then it was so quick, man. It was so quick. I mean, these, like I said, these experiences, these incidences only happen within 15 seconds. You know, yeah. They happen so quick. And so, and it's funny because I would always tell people, you know, and be like, you know, it's more or less like walking into somebody's house. If they don't want you there, they will let you know. Or they, you know, that sort of, it's like, you know, it's treating them with respect. It's like if I'm going to be a dick to you, you're going to be a dick to me back, of course. And so it's kind of like the same concept. And so, yeah, I kind of laughed after that. I remember I kind of like chuckled. I'm like, well, that's kind of what you get for provoking them, you know? And so, yeah, I'll never forget that one, man.
Is there something you do once you start like going into these buildings? You have to like sage it or something?
No, because I know that like the whole like following me home thing. No, because I know they're not going to, because they're so attached to these buildings. I mean, let's put it this way. When I was in the New Hall Ranch House, for example, at Heritage Junction, so all those buildings, like I told you over there, were not originally built there. They were all moved. And so the New Hall Ranch House used to be, like I said, where Magic Mountain is now. And so when I was younger, there was a gentleman. He's since passed. His name was J.D. Gallagher. His brother Dean, also, I interviewed him too. But they lived in that house when it was still, they were the ranch foreman, one of the last ranch foremen for New Hall Land and Farming Company. And this was, we're talking like from the late 1950s up until 1973. So we're talking well over 50 years ago. They've since passed. They're no longer with us, type of thing. And so I remember being in the New Hall Ranch House. I was probably like 16, 17. And Dean, Mr. Gallion telling me that they would have to bolt all the doors, because they have this spirit that they would call Mr. Jingles that would kind of like play practical jokes on them, kind of be a funny nuisance, more or less. So there's always been, these instances happened, you know, when they were living there in the 50s and 60s, 70s. So, and obviously the house has been moved, so the spirits have, and I've had experiences there, as I've told you already. And so, yeah, the spirits have definitely, they're so attached that they basically followed with the move of the house. So, I'm really not, to me, I've never been concerned about them following me home. Now, not as to say that it's definitely to some people, it's caused, like, health, it's caused them mental, like my one friend I was telling you, remember my friend Bridget, when we would investigate there, but she also kind of provoked them, so it kind of, yeah. But, her and her husband divorced, so not too long after, she left, and so it really kind of, for certain people, the house kind of ate at them, if you know what I mean. But for me, I was at that point, I was so used to these experiences. Like now, if something were to happen to me, it would be so second nature.
While I am not knowledgeable of many direct cases that have involved someone making fun of ghosts and then being haunted as a direct consequence, the concept of mocking or disrespecting ghosts or spirits in folklore and popular culture usually carries warnings about consequences or some form of retribution. And one thing I know is to never mock a spirit. And I mean, of course, we see this happen in movies all the time. It's kind of like that meme, the more you fuck around, the more you're gonna find out, right? It's a positive relationship. Even entering into haunted spaces is a form of fucking around, because you're putting yourself in a place where a spirit can reach you since you are in their domain. The Frighteners, a film released in 1996 directed by Peter Jackson, was a horror comedy that follows a man who can communicate and form friendship with ghosts, whom he used to stage fake hauntings to con people out of their money. But the protagonist would encounter a malevolent spirit that wasn't too fond of his antics, and the spirit started to cause real harm. Now this plot, which does show someone messing around with a ghost, makes me think, do ghosts actually have feelings? Do they get pissed off or vengeful when people act bad towards them or mock their presence? In many cultural and religious beliefs, ghosts or spirits are often considered to be the souls or consciousness of deceased individuals who have not moved on to the afterlife or who have unfinished business on earth. As such, these spirits may be thought to retain some aspects of their personality, memories, and emotions from their previous life. For example, in some ghost stories, spirits are depicted as being angry, vengeful, sad, or tormented due to unresolved issues or tragic circumstances surrounding their death. These emotions drive their actions, leading to hauntings or interactions with the living. Like Evan said, if someone is acting like a dick towards you, you're prone to act like a dick back. And that's why that teenage boy left that house so fast, because he knew what the hell was coming to him.
So Evan, can you tell me a little more about, like, when you said the people that claimed to have psychiatric abilities, like, what did they say? That was like, what did they say when they would say stuff?
With the New Hall Ranch House, it was the same thing. I would lead them in through the front door. So immediately in the front door, there's the parlor where the fireplace is, and then there's two rooms off the side. And so they would walk in, and you would just, I remember one of them, like, immediately through the front door, she walked in, and it was like, oh, like, you could tell her vibe changed, like, she felt something, you could tell. And so, she says, oh, I feel a great sense of sadness in this house, something horrible happened here, blah, blah, blah. And then for all three, all of these people would immediately go to the room to the left. And that's where we think the room where Margaret Rutledge was murdered in. So, and there was one time we were, so I used to, having keys, I used to bring friends of mine that were ghost hunters. I have a lot of friends that are in the paranormal field, and that these two particular ladies that I know, they've investigated there for many years. Actually, one of them was in the Ghost Adventures episode of Junction. Bridget, if you've ever seen that episode, it came out back in 2013, but there's a woman on there, long blonde-haired chick named Bridget, that Zach interviews. And she... that house and her, it's a weird, like, friction thing. Like, I don't know what it is with her in that house, but it was always just, for her being in that house was unhealthy. It always changed her. And so, but it was only with her in a negative way. Everybody else, it wasn't as bad. These two lady friends of mine, Linda and Bridget, they investigated there years before I even started volunteering there. And so I feel like, and they would, I mean, spend nights there. And so I feel like with Bridget, I mean, literally, there was one time we walked in. It was just Linda, Bridget, and I. And we were in the, we were outside, and, you know, we would just meet up and, you know, ghost hunt. Just impromptu, hey, let's go ghost hunt. I have the key, let's go. And so it would be, you know, fine and dandy outside. Within, I remember distinctly this one particular night. We were, you know, all normal and whatever. Within 5 minutes of being in that house, I kid you not, Bridget turns to Linda, and they're best friends. They're like sisters. Bridget turns to Linda and says, I want to fucking kill you. Like, looks her dead in the eyes. And I was standing there, like, I was standing right there. And you could see, like, she was serious. In her facial expression, it was like she was ready to, like, do something horrific. And so
it was no like build up to that. She just said it out of the blue.
No, she would always, there were times, and I think at that time too, there were times where she would be like, I just don't like being in here. I don't. And she kind of, I'll be honest with you, she kind of provoked them a little bit. So it was kind of, she would kind of be like, more or less, you want a piece of me kind of thing. She's a very kind of tough lady. You know, tattoos, rough, kind of. And so she kind of, I think, provoked him to a point where they kind of inflicted harm on her. Because they never did anything bad to me in all the times I've been there. I've heard crazy things, but never. She's been touched. She's been pushed. Those kind of things have never happened. She was scratched one time in the upstairs. That has never happened to me.
When that lady, so when she said that shit, that I want, what did she say again? Was it, I want to kill you?
She was basically like, I want to effing kill you. That's it.
So what exactly happened? What happened after that?
We left. Because it was, we already knew it was kind of just like, it was going nowhere. And if we stayed, we felt like if we stayed longer, it was just going to keep going south in that house. And so we left, and I locked the house up, and she was fine.
She just snapped back to normal after that?
Yep.
Did she know she said that?
No. No. She had no recollection.
You guys told her that, like, maybe, like, later on?
It was probably, yeah, because it was at the time. I didn't have, they drove me home, so it was later on, they in the car, we told her. Yeah.
And the other lady kind of realized that it wasn't her. It was like a possession sort of thing.
I don't know. I wouldn't go as far as, I don't know if it would be considered a possession. Because it wasn't like a full on, like her voice changed. Her voice tone was still the same.
So sad.
I don't know. It was just her personality was like completely different. But her voice, her tone. I don't know. It was one of the more bizarre experiences I've had in that house.
That is pretty bizarre. And how long did that experience happen? Was it just a quick, like, minute, or?
Oh, we weren't even in the house 5 minutes, dude.
We weren't. So even her behavior changed as soon as she walked through the door.
Basically, within the first 5 minutes of being in that house.
Wow.
Too many times to count where I have been present with these paranormal investigators walking with them through the Historical Society. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. I actually participated in a seance in the New Hall Ranch House. I've been in two seances in my lifetime. That one and the one in the New Hall Ranch House, and then I was in another one, of all places, the Queen Mary. I participated in a seance there on the Queen Mary.
Wow.
So, but the New Hall Ranch House one, that was interesting. That was very, very, very interesting, that seance session. I mean, literally, the table that we were sitting at was jumping up and down. And it wasn't anybody's leg moving, because I actually kind of like went, like, kind of looked down to check to make sure. And no. And this thing was like going boo boo boo, you know. It was like literally the Exorcist in the scene where the foot of the bed is going boom 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 on the floor. It was like that, more or less. A little lighter, but still the concept. The time in the ranch house, that was creepy. And going back to Timmy and him, so in that seance, he would have trigger objects, you know, little toys and whatever. And we had a red bouncy ball. And I kid you not, that ball went from one room next. That thing rolled around, like, from one room to another. It was the most mind-blowing thing I've ever seen.
And there's no windows, no draft that could have pushed it?
No, the windows were all... There are big windows, but they were all shut and latched at the time. And actually, at the time we did this seance, it was in October, right before we opened for a haunt. We used to do a Halloween attraction there, kind of like Fright Fest. We'd use part of that. We'd do mazes and use part of the house, the rooms in the house, incorporate those as in the maze.
How did the people running the seance, how did they react to the table jumping up and down?
Second nature, because the gentleman who officiated the seance has been a paranormal investigator, and he's actually a retired archaeologist, grew up in the LA area, but he's investigated this stuff for 50 years plus. So these people have been doing it, you know, the people I do it with and try, you know, because I wouldn't just do, because you know how seances are, they can be dangerous. And so, that I would never participate in a seance. The only reason why I did is because the gentleman that officiated it has been doing this stuff for so long. And he's, you know, born and raised LA. So he's very much in tune, and he's investigated probably every haunted historic location in the Los Angeles, and even I would go as far as to saying the entire Southern California region. And so, that's the only reason why I don't condone them, but that's the only reason why I participate in one, because he does like a whole opening permission statement and then a closing statement and all that. So he does it correctly.
What was the talk when that happened, though? Did he say, like, what it might have been? Did he say it was positive energy, negative energy, or?
Probably a minute. Or is he allowed to talk during that time? Because this seance, when we did it, it was in 2010. I was 13 years old when I participated in this. And so, at least from what I can recall, it was kind of a mixture of both. Because the room we did the seance in, it was in the room we think Margaret Rutledge was murdered in. So there's always been, I wouldn't say it's negative, in the sense of like evil or bad, more like a sadness, like a sad, sorrowful feeling.
So, in case you guys don't know, which I'm sure there may be some listeners who wouldn't know, what is a seance exactly? A seance is a spiritual or paranormal gathering during which people attempt to communicate with the spirits of the deceased. The term seance, in French,
means sitting or session. During a seance, a medium or a person with purported psychic abilities acts as a facilitator to establish a connection with the spirit world. The participants typically sit around a table or in a circle and may hold hands and create a sense of unity and energy. The medium may use various methods of communication in order to communicate with the spirits, such as holding an object that belonged to the deceased or using an Ouija board to spell out messages. The purpose of a seance is to receive messages from spirits, gain insights, seek guidance, or attempt to resolve unresolved issues from the past. Participants often ask questions, and the medium may relay responses or symbols believed to be coming from the spirits. Seances are part of spiritualism, a movement that gained popularity in the 19th century, with claims of communication with the spirit world and the afterlife. And as for why the table began shaking so violently during Evan's experience, I'll leave it up to you guys to interpret whether this could have been tied to some sort of particular energy. Evan mentioned that he did not see anyone forcibly moving the table, and he also mentioned that no one got harmed. Now, before we go on with this story, please don't touch that dial, as we will have to take another commercial break.
So, but yeah, I mean, that was definitely one of the more interesting. And then another time we had, so back then down there, we used to have, you know, like how Six Flags has their, you know, Magic Mountain has their Fright Fest Halloween attraction. So that when I actually first started volunteering in 2010 at the historical, so that's where I started first before coming up here. We used to do this. It was basically like a Fright Fest. It was called the Heritage Haunt. And we would actually turn part of the rooms, start in the summer and build these really cool mazes. And we would actually incorporate rooms in the New Hall Ranch House as part of the maze.
Yeah.
And so that's how I started. And we would do, you know, paranormal investigations after, you know, as part of the event and everything. But, that's where I was going. So we would actually have meetings in the back room of the New Hall Ranch House, which was the old dining room. It's not furnished to the time. So basically all the buildings are in various stages of restoration. The New Hall Ranch House is in the furthest back, you know, furthest from being restored. So at that time, what was the old dining room, we used it as a meeting room. It had, you know, a refrigerator, you know, it was like a break room, like a typical break room. And okay. We were having a meeting in there, and we were introducing someone new onto the haunt team. And we were, after the meeting was done, we were all just kind of talking. And mind you, there were 12 of us in this room. So it wasn't just me. It wasn't, you know, a few people. There were 12 people in this room. So we're introducing somebody new onto the team, and I was there too. And after the meeting, the one person goes up to her and says, you know, by the way, you know, this house is like one of the most haunted house in the Santa Clara Valley. A murder took, and she basically, you know, went BS, you know, you're pulling my chain type of thing. Within 5 seconds, so we had these pictures of previous haunt events on the walls throughout the room. And one of the pictures actually flew off the wall and landed on the table. Jumped off the wall. And it was on, like, if you're familiar with what a J-hook is, it's like a J-hook you can just, you know, set the picture frame on. So you can't just pull it off, you have to kind of, like, lift. Yeah, so it jumped off the wall on its own. And landed on the table. And all 12 of us saw it, and to this day, she is a believer.
5 seconds of her.
And that's all it took.
Did she see anything? Did she say anything else after that?
She was convinced after that for sure. I mean, it's not every day you see a picture fly off a wall on its own.
Did the picture frame break when it landed on a table, or was it just?
It was a plastic. Laid out pretty perfectly. Yeah, it was more or less laid out. It was just a cheapy plastic, you know, picture frame. So it didn't break. It just kind of.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, to be a fly on the wall in that room.
Wow. Did anybody ever get harmed in that house?
Bridget. That's the only person I can.
Oh yeah, was that the one?
Yeah.
That you said,
she definitely. There was actually. Now that I think about it, there was a time where she was scratched in the house on the second floor. The second floor has always been the most active part of the house, of the New Hall Ranch house. And even I, when I would go up there, I never liked going up there alone. And I would never go in that house at night. I mean, I have been there at night alone, but it was kind of like one of those things where it was kind of like you have to like suck it up and whatever. But
what makes you have to go?
Because I would do some work. I'm a workaholic. And so, you know, do, you know, grounds work and whatever, you know, I had access because I was on the board of directors at the time. I had access to everything. So I would just go there on my own time at any time, at, you know, during the day or night, and just do whatever work. And sometimes I'd end up knocking out, falling asleep there. But, wow. You know, there's 8 buildings. I preferred the station. When I was on the board, I was 18 years old. I was, you know, any 18, if you were given, let's put it in perspective. Go to your 18 year old self. If you were handed keys to a historic building, to 8 historic buildings, would you want to bring your friends there and, you know, have them, you know, let's go do a little ghost hunting? Of course. And so I would do that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes. And sometimes, I'll be honest, we would do like little sleepovers. And so, my buddy and I spent the night there, and we woke up. I mean, it was so loud, it shot us out of bed. We heard a gunshot in the house, but it wasn't like outside, because where we are at night, it's kind of like you hear gunshots and whatever in New Hall. But it sounded like it was inside the house, because it was loud. We were in a deep sleep, and it was loud enough where we both shot, like, synchronically shot out of bed. You know, I'm going to be 26 this month, and, come to think of it, I've basically been here working, volunteering, however you want to put it, half my life. I started here at 13. So, you know, I've seen enough.
So, you, and what do you, like, because it doesn't seem like you really trigger the spirits in the houses as much.
Right? Well, I've had clairvoyants and, you know, those mediums or whatever tell me that the spirits are happy that I'm here, because they know I'm in there to tell their stories, the history. Because, like I said, it all, you know, if you really think about it, to have a ghost, a paranormal ghost story or a haunting, period, there has to be some hit. You have to have history tied to it. You have to, because that it's basically, if you think about it, it's like a replay of history. These paranormal occurrences. It's basically a replay of history, and so you really have to, you know, have the history to have a haunting, as I would say. So. Yeah, I've always been told like, that the spirits all the spirits and all the buildings like me, because I'm, you know, I'm trying to tell the truth and tell the history and, you know, preserve the history all at the same time.
Evan would then go on to tell me about the haunted train station within Heritage Junction.
Uh-huh. I mean, like, one time, and there was one time, oh my God, one more story. In the train station, So in the second floor of the depot, when the station was active as a railroad depot, so they had what was the upstairs was the station agent's apartment. So there was, you know, he was the guy that made sure the trains were on time, that, you know, they were coming and going smoothly. And so the upstairs, it's just four little rooms in this August train station. And that was the apartment for him and his family. And so after the station was moved to the by the Historical Society, we used that as our archiving offices. You know, we had big scanners in there where we would, you know, scan documents and inventory picture, you know, basic, you know, archival shit. And so I caught my office, because it was the only one that used that room frequently, was the old living room. And so you would have to go to get upstairs, you would have to go through the gift shop, through the kitchen, through a doorway, up a stairwell. And there's several series of doors you go through. And what I would do is, when I would unlock the building, you know, disarm the alarm, because there's an alarm. And I would lock the door, deadbolt it, every door behind me. It was almost instinctual, I would do it. And so, when you, in the kitchen, there was, we had an electric, it was basically just a prep kitchen, a warming kitchen for, you know, would have events there and we'd use the kitchen. But we had pots and pans and everything stacked up on top of the stove. And I walked by, just, you know, whatever, not, you know, doing my normal shit. I go upstairs, and by the way, this was at 9 a.m., so this was in the morning. And so I go to turn on my computer, and I kid you not, man, it sounded like somebody, took that whole stack of pots and pans and just chucked them across the room. It was, I kid you not, it was that I was this close to calling the park office to tell them, be ready for a bunch of cops to show up because I think someone's breaking into the station. And so I shouldn't have done, well, now look, I'm glad I did now, but I actually went to investigate and I went down the stairs, you know, because the doorway between, basically the doorway at the bottom of the stairs is to the kitchen. And so I'm like, hello, is anybody there? I'm calling, the cops are on their way, because it literally sounded like someone's breaking. And so no response, nobody was, you know, replying back. And I go and open the door to the kitchen, pots and pans stacked up just as I passed them the first time. Nothing was touched, nothing was moved. Nothing was moved. This was at 9, I will never forget, that was another big, I've had little experiences there, but that was definitely another one of those major. That one definitely startled me. I think I left that day. I locked the building. I went down because I'm friends with the people down in the park office, and I went down and hung out in the park office for like 2 hours because I did not want to be in that building alone. I was like, nope.
Did anybody else ever say they had a similar experience to that?
We've heard, people have heard loud sounds and bangs and crashes, yes. Several paranormal groups have actually caught Class A, full-on Class A EVPs in those rooms, actually. And Bridget, so my friend Bridget, the same lady that did that had the freak out, she is a professional photographer. And in that same room, years prior, before I started volunteering there, she captured a series of... She basically, with her camera, went and took five, you know, flash photos, you know, consecutive, just going around the rooms, and it ended up in the room that was to be my office. She gets the picture and the image you can see the image, it's just a shadow, basically we call him the shadow man. See him wearing a brimmed hat, and in each photo consecutively he looks like he's climbing out the window. And it, remember I pointed in that picture, that addition, that boxcar, that thing that was attached, so that was on that side, it was an addition. There was like a laundry room and a, like a porch, sun porch kind of thing in that. It was a converted boxcar.
So that'll be all the stories from the interview between Evan and I. If you have stuck around this long, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I want to give a huge shout out to Evan Decker, who came on not just for this episode, but also my other episode, Season 8, Episode 2, Mentryville, where we talk about Mentryville, the first haunted location in Santa Clarita that I ever brought up on my Instagram and TikTok videos. Make sure you all go follow Evan's organization, Mentryville California Inc., on Instagram. The link will be in the description of this episode. And also follow Evan's Instagram page, SCV History Moments. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and a review on your respective podcast player. And if you have any stories you would like to share on my podcast, either written or interview form, similar to what I did with Evan here, please don't hesitate to reach out to me via Instagram at TheScareCast or email mike@thescarecast.com. Of course, everything will be in the description of this episode. And as always, be safe, and until next time.